This podcast is supported by Understood Explains. As parents, we are often having to figure out things as we go, and that is very true for our children's education. And to help you out, I want to tell you about a podcast called Understood Explains. This season is hosted by teacher and special education expert Uliana Ortube, and she discusses all the things you'd want to know about individual education plans, or IEPs, what they are, why they're needed, who benefits from them, and what to expect when you have meetings with teachers. I could have really used this podcast when my son had an IEP for speech when he was six. I was overwhelmed trying to understand the process and what everything meant. The episode on Understood Explains, Does My Child Need an IEP, was the kind of info that would have really helped me get the most out of the educational support of the IEP for my son. And if you need that kind of support, I really recommend this podcast. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. Welcome to Mom and Mind. I'm perinatal psychologist and host Dr. Kat. There's more to the story than just postpartum depression, and this podcast aims to share it all. From personal stories and lived experience to experts who break down the ups and downs of life from getting pregnant, pregnancy, perinatal loss, and postpartum adjustment to parenthood. While this is not psychotherapy or medical advice, it is all of the stuff you ever wanted to know about mental health and new parenthood. Welcome to Mom and Mind. I am your host, Dr. Kat. For the month of October, we are covering stories from people who have lived experience of dealing with pregnancy or infant loss. As usual, when we go over episodes that tend to be a little bit more difficult in terms of the content, I welcome you to decide for yourself if listening to this week's episode is available and up for you. And if it's not, then this episode will be available whenever you're ready. This week, we are talking with Jen Burgard. She is the mom of two living children and one who lives solely in her heart. She is a lost mom, a living mom, wife, founder, podcaster, director, and most proudly, survivor. Upon the death of her second child, she set out to fill a gap in accessibility to resources, support, and community for others who are also experiencing trauma. With a personal experience of her own and her newly formed network, she launched Haven as a service to grieving parents in and around her region. Today, Haven has touched each of the 50 states with their healing gifts, podcast content, and online grief workshops, with a goal to bring awareness and understanding not only to child loss, but our grief culture in general. She is creating and building conversations through her podcast called Landscape of Loss. Today, Jen is sharing with us parts of her personal story and what prompted her to start this program. And we go over various ways that trauma and PTSD can show up for people as a result of pregnancy loss, and how that can look different from person to person. As you've maybe heard before, the saying trauma is in the eye of the beholder. That really means that your own personal experience, whether other people agree with it or not, can be traumatizing even if no one else sees it or understands why. And as you probably heard about on the podcast already, and as I'd like to reinforce, pregnancy loss is often called a traumatic type of loss. And through the program that Jen has started, she is really aiming to help and support pregnancy loss families, infant loss families, so that they know that they're not alone. On that note, let's hear from Jen. Welcome, Jen. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm especially grateful that you're sharing your story and we'll be able to share this during Pregnancy Infant Loss Awareness Month. So, you know, as you know, through your work and your podcast, that more and more people are learning about the depth of this kind of loss and the sensitivity that comes with it. Sensitivity meaning, you know, feeling this loss for a long time. And if not, we'll get into that. But it's just especially important during this month when awareness is being raised to have stories like yours being shared. So yeah, I'd love for you to start wherever you're comfortable.
Great. Well, thank you. And thanks for hosting this space. especially in light of pregnancy and infant loss remembrance. It's such an important topic and truly one I didn't really have any kind of idea or grasp on. Like, you don't really. I mean, we all know about Breast Cancer Awareness Month, right, in October as well, which is incredibly amazing cause. And this is one, it wasn't on the radar for me. And so in 2016, I was pregnant with my second child, a little boy, a little brother to his big sister, who was 2 at the time, just about 3. So I had my perfect little nuclear family, you know, all keyed up, ready to go, and no issues in the pregnancy. And then at 39 weeks to the day, I was making breakfast for my daughter, and I had just the strangest feeling, and I sat down to just rest because, you know, you're tired. 39 weeks, just sat down to rest and immediately felt better. But then a couple seconds passed and I looked to my husband and I said, oh my gosh, I think my water just broke. And I was so excited. I was like, oh, this is great. This is great. I just went into labor naturally on my own. This is what I've always wanted. This is fantastic. It wasn't until I quickly got up and went to the bathroom that I realized that it wasn't my water that broke and that I had lost an incredible amount of blood. Mm. I passed out from lack of blood, I believe, and maybe shock. But when I woke up, my husband was there and my daughter was there and they were calling the hospital just to kind of get an understanding of what was going on, what we should do. So we rushed in immediately and we got there, and after some check-in processes, the doctor did decide to take me for an emergency C-section. He said he saw a flicker of a heartbeat. And so we went, and within 8 minutes from that decision, my son was born, and I was not awake for any of it. I was put out under anesthesia. And when I woke up, I remember being mostly alone. There was a nurse in the room, but it was in a strange room. It felt like a closet, which it was odd. And I remember thinking I was in a dream. And so I asked the nurse if I could see my husband, and she obliged quickly. And when he came in, he just took my hand and he said, you know, we're not going to get to take him home. And I didn't know what he meant necessarily at that time. I was really hopeful that meant there was hope, right? There was a chance, or, you know, I just wasn't sure.
Right.
Well, came to it, and what had happened is I'd experienced a complete placental abruption at exactly 39 weeks. And, you know, our son just didn't have access to oxygen for a fair amount of time because it happened at home, right? And they did the C-section. They did everything as quickly as possible. They actually successfully resuscitated him and then said, you know, he has as long as, you know, he's willing to fight and he's willing to give you, but really he's not going to make it. He's just every test, every effort, he's not going to make it. So we knew that he was going to die there that day. We didn't know when, we didn't know what it would look like, what it would be like. But so we had just under 13 hours with him. So 13 hours to let some of our family meet him, to, you know, just take in every moment that we possibly could and hold him, kiss him, love on him. And then eventually, you know, about 10 o'clock that evening, he took his last breath within our arms, and that was it. And, you know, it's when I tell this story, sometimes I think it sounds so gentle and soft and, you know, but I think that's so different from the way that we were feeling internally about it. You know, I think there's a lot of great care in that space, right? The nurses, the physicians that are there, there's so much great tender care, but inside, I mean, it's turmoil, right? Right. I mean,
yeah, that's my wonder, like, how are you actually doing?
Yeah. So, you know, the weeks that followed, the days, the weeks, the months, it was rough, right? It was rough. And it was all very, you know, well, whatever you're feeling is okay. It's normal. You're going to go through these phases of grief, but you'll be in and out of those. And then eventually you'll be better and it'll all, you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Right. And that was just felt like such misguided advice, you know, because I think in my mind, I was confused. I was very confused because I'm looking at it like this is the 21st century, right? How is this happening exactly? You know, and they even in the hospital, they would say this never happens. This never happens.
They said that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Said, we are so sorry. This never happens.
No, and I don't say that either.
And I was like, well, why me though? Right. Why did it happen to me? What did I do? You know, so I immediately started to blame myself. And I remember thinking, well, there must be a reason, right? There, you know, because that was another thing that people used to say, well, you know, there's always a reason for everything that happens. And I took that the reason was I was being punished. Mm. I was being punished for some mistake or something I'd done at somewhere in my life, and I couldn't figure out what it was, but I must have done something horrible to deserve this. So I'm racking my mind trying to think of all the reasons that this is my fault, right? And this is my penance, right? And at the time, you know, I wish I would have had, you know, someone to kind of speak these words to out loud at that time. I should have been journaling, you know, and kind of writing these things down, because I think it'd be amazing to go back, you know, and look at that 5 years later and say, wow, you know, that's what a different mindset, because I think you would gain so much clarity from that.
Mm-hmm. This podcast is supported by Factor. If you want stress-free and ready-to-eat meals for you and your family, then Factor it is. These meals are fresh and crafted by chefs, and all of that means that in 2 minutes, you can be eating a quality meal that you can really taste because it's never been frozen. You just heat and serve. Yesterday for lunch, I had the honey mustard chicken with green beans and potatoes, and it was so full of flavor, and it was also just the right amount of food to keep me going for the day and feeling good with the amount of protein that I needed. And what's cool is I'm going out of town for a little bit, and it was really easy to put the delivery on pause and set it up for when I return. Head to factormeals.com/momandmind50 and use code momandmind50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code momandmind50 at factormeals.com/momandmind50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Yeah, I am. I mean, I am thinking for, right, similar to how you were saying, like, it looked so peaceful on the outside, but there was the turmoil happening inside. If I can, for a moment, just go back to you finding out that your son was going to pass. Like, what happens in that moment?
I felt like, I said, you know, when they came in the NICU, you know, physician came in and said, this is what we did. These are the tests that we've done. This is all the stuff, right? Like we've tried this and this and this, and this is the result. And, you know, in the end, this is your decision, right? Whether to, for lack of a better phrase, you know, pull the cord, you know, that this is the outcome. It's the same, you know, and as if my blood hadn't already literally drained from my body, I felt like it's like I felt everything drop out, right? And then, you know, the actual physical, I know physically my heart did not sink, but it felt like physically things shifted. It felt like, and I can only assume that it's nerve endings, right? That are firing and, you know, that are in response to what your brain is feeling or what you're feeling and what your brain is processing. But I felt it. I felt it when they said it. And I was stuck between wanting to cry and, you know, tears streaming down my face and wanting to stay strong, right? And be that person that, well, she handled it real well, right? She really toughed that one out. You know, she's so strong. And I wanted to be that strong person, you know? Mm-hmm. Not for me, right? I didn't want to, it wasn't for me, but I didn't want to cause problems, right? I wanted to be a good patient. I wanted to be a good mom, a good wife, a good daughter, right? I wanted to do all the right things, make sure everyone else got to hold my baby, you know, and that I was, again, not causing any problems, right? And so on the outside, that's how like that vision, right, that I was trying to create. But on the inside, I was screaming. Mm-hmm. I wanted to throw things, right?
Of course,
I wanted to, you know, scream at every person who walked in the room. I wanted everything to stop. I wanted them to shut the lights off. I wanted traffic to stop. Right. I was angry at traffic, like, happening outside, you know, because my world stopped. Mine stopped. And it felt like everything else just kept going. Mm-hmm. And it felt so unnatural.
That everything else is just continuing to go.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I just kept thinking, well, if they knew this is what was happening right now, everything would stop. Mm-hmm. Everything would stop. You know, I mean, we are the centers of our own universe, right? So, but it, and that's how I felt in that moment, right? I mean, in the hospital, those first few days, it was, I got to imagine, you know, just some shock, you know?
Right. Like a numb feeling or just like feeling everything kind of or both?
I would say more numb. I would say more numb because I don't think the reality set in until, you know, days later, of course, you know, you go home, but we were so lucky to have family and friends around that were incredibly supportive. Right. But they start to go home, right. They leave and they need to get back to doing what they're doing. And then it's just you, right? And you're there and you're supposed to be parenting and you're not. And then it really sets in. And I think when my husband went back to work, I remember one morning actually feeling the feelings and I was like, this is it. This is the bottom, right? Like this is the moment. And so I just remember thinking, you know, yeah, this is it. And I will never forget. I laid down on the floor in front of my fireplace where I had his photo and I just cried and I screamed and I was angry and I was finally let all of those feelings out that I was feeling. And it was not attractive. It's not a good look, right? But I just, it was real and I scared myself with this reaction because I had never felt this way. I had never endured anything like this in my life. And, you know, I'm so grateful. I think I do when people say things happen, right. Or for a reason or however you want to, address that. Randomly, my husband called me from work that day and hadn't, this wasn't his first day back. He doesn't call me from work. He's busy. And he called me right in this moment and just said, "Hey, I just wanted to check in on you. I just had this feeling and I wanted to check in on you." And I'm just like, and it was the one thing that pulled me up off the floor. It pulled me up off the floor and got me to keep going.
Right.
Even just throughout that day, for that hour, right? I made it through another hour because of that one phone call, that one thing that helped, right? You need to see the light again, you know, when you're just so dark and you're in that place. And so.
Right. And it's like all consuming internally. Like there's nothing else happening.
There was nothing else happening. Nothing else happening. And I haven't been in that spot again since. And so I do consider it in some ways rock bottom, but then it turns out there's different versions of that, right? I mean, I can almost giggle about it now, you know, but really it's the last 5 years have just been sprinkled and littered with different moments and different experiences that really, I mean, I don't know which one is, I wouldn't say one is worse or better, or it's just different, you know, it's just different.
Right. So I mean, this is what you're talking about. Your experience is like very, very close to the time that he passed and you're postpartum and still I'm having to physically recover, let alone mentally, emotionally, to cope and deal with all that has happened. So outside of that immediate intensity, what would you say about, for lack of a better word, like recovery and healing? What's that process? And, you know, how long does, again, in air quotes, like how long does that take?
Yeah. Well, we know that's a lifelong process, right? So that's an easy answer, right? How long does it take? Grief lasts as long as love lasts, right? Yeah. And so I think, you know, you could start to identify moments that were pivotal and changed. You know, I think at some point I had to go back to work, right? And you know, so about 4 months after I went back to work and, you know, dipped my toe in that water, started out part-time, which I think I would recommend to anyone if you can, if you can make that happen, you know. And, you know, I had conversations, very direct conversations with my superiors at my office and just said, look, like, this is what I need. I'm going to need some space, but I need you to not be afraid to talk to me, for number one. Mm. For number two, sometimes I'm going to need to just go in this conference room and cry. Right. Yeah. I don't need you to check on me. I'll be okay. Right. But I might just start crying, and that's okay. And no one has to be afraid of me or afraid of that. Right? And the third thing is, you know, partially with, you know, don't be afraid to bring it up. Don't be afraid to bring up my son, because I might cry. I probably will. If you bring him up, I will. But it's not because you brought him up. Because I'm always on the edge of tears at this stage, right? I'm always about to cry. So it could happen regardless of anything you say or don't say. Right. And so this really was my first bit in, you know, practicing how I was going to be and function in public as an adult human woman that has a job and another child at home and friends and colleagues, right? I still have to be that person if I want, right? Or some version of that person, you know? And so it was practice. It just took practice. And slowly I built up this, you know, almost an armor or a muscle, right? That helped protect me and help protect, you know, my heart for those moments, because we know that there are people that just maybe aren't going to get it or don't want to talk about it. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. But I have to be able to protect myself from that situation, so I don't let it pull me down and pull me into a place that I've already grown from. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I don't need their understanding, approval, acceptance about the way that I'm grieving or the way that I'm feeling. mm-hmm. in order to feel whole, right? In order to feel like I'm growing and I'm filling my heart back up, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think one of the hardest things, though, was a lot of behaviors that changed for me. And onset of new behaviors that were confusing. And at the time, I really didn't get it. And specifically, I remember I went for a walk with a friend and she had come to visit me. And I said, let's go for a walk so I can clear my head. A slow walk because I'm recovering from a C-section, right? Mm-hmm. So very slow walk, but a walk. And we were walking and all of a sudden, this dog barks. And not a loud dog, not even close to us. I jumped so far and so far off the path that I bumped into my friend. And I think I screamed out loud and just, you know, kind of grabbed my arms and myself. And then my heart was just racing. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And my friend looked at me. She's like, are you okay? And I said, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know what that was. I'm not afraid of dogs, right? Again, adult woman, not afraid of dogs. And I couldn't understand what had just happened. It was the strangest thing, you know, and I was like, okay, that was different. That was weird. And I said, I'm just on edge. It's okay. Mm-hmm. This is why we're walking, right? This is why we're walking. But walking did become a really big part of my healing. I enjoy walks. I think it's grounding. I think it's good to be in nature. But I kept running into this same problem. So I started to avoid areas that I knew had dogs, that I knew might bark, but even a bird. A bird would be in my path. And I would immediately start thinking this bird is going to attack me. Mm. It's going to attack me. And then I'm going to be out here by myself. And then they're going to find this woman attacked by this bird. And my brain would just start going into these spirals of really ridiculous, you know, ridiculous things that are not going to happen. But that's where my head was at. You know, a grasshopper or a cricket would jump up and I would scream and I would run the other way. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't stand loud noises. Right. Anything loud or a sharp noise, I was having a lot of trouble with. And the place that I worked actually was a furniture, commercial furniture company. Mm-hmm. And so they were always installing new furniture in our showroom and what have you. And when they started with the drills and the hammer, I had to leave. I couldn't take it. And it made no sense. Mm-hmm. It made absolutely no sense.
This is all new to you. Like you've mm-hmm. never experienced this before. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so this continued, I mean, for months and months and months, and it started to soften a little bit. But then even years later, I realized I was still having these reactions, these ridiculous reactions to loud noises. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, creating these scenarios in my head where myself, my whole rest of my family dies for whatever reason, you know, and it just did not make sense. And this was, you know, I knew I'd had some issues with anxiety in the past, right? Or, you know, but nothing too crazy. And so finally I went to go see someone and talked to them through some of this stuff. And it became a therapist. Yes. And she just looked at me and she said, well, that's post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm. She said, you're having these reactions to something that, you know, in your brain aren't a big deal, but your brain hasn't figured it out, right? I wish I could explain it as well as they do. And maybe you could, right? I mean, but I think it made sense when she said it and when she validated what was happening and the feelings and identified it and could call it something and give me tools to help not fix it necessarily, but tools to help manage it, right? And to keep managing my life and keep growing and keep building on the healing that I'd already done. Mm-hmm. But because I felt like I was stuck and I didn't know why.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Which is a feeling that comes with PTSD.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So that, like, and PTSD trauma can show up for anybody in multiple ways, but in particular, I assume that you're talking about, and your therapist helped you connect it to the trauma of the birth and the loss of your son.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, just understanding that, you know, life can be taken so quickly, right? I mean, and you just, you don't see it coming. And that's just the reality of it. And I knew that, right? We all know that. But until you, I think, experience it, and it, because it happens so quick, mm-hmm. it's like my life was this certain way. And then within an hour, it was different. Right. And it will be different forever.
Right.
Because now I truly do look at my life. And I think a lot of other lost parents I've talked to feel this way, that you look at your life in before and after. Mm-hmm. It's before your child died and then after. There are two very clear parts, and that's just how we live now. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, I used to look at photos, you know, and just say, oh yeah, I was pregnant with Henry then. Oh yeah, that was before Henry. Yep, that's a real smile. Mm-hmm. And the year following, oh yeah, that's the after Henry smile. That one's not real, you know? Oh,
yeah, like you're just kind of showing up, forcing a smile for, yep.
Mm-hmm. I could see it. And I could see it. It was interesting because I also found something else I did after, you know, we were with family and doing whatever, you know, in that year following, when we take a family photo, when anyone would take a photo of me, I unfocused my eyes and pretended like I wasn't there. Wow. Yeah. And I'm like, I just have to pretend like I'm not here and this isn't happening. And I don't do that anymore. But it was an interesting response mm-hmm. that just felt safer. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Isn't that fascinating? I mean, in terms of the way trauma impacts people and PTSD works, is it's all, it might be strange and feel weird to you, but it's all in like the effort to protect you from a bad thing happening again. You're like, your brain is over-perceiving all of these threats. And so like you're describing, even being in a room of people, even if you know them, doesn't matter. Like if that's where you're feeling, if that's what you're feeling, then that's what you're feeling. And your brain does what it needs to do until it learns mm-hmm. that things are safe.
Right. Until it learns. And because I remember my therapist saying, you know, like, hey, you're safe right now. Right now you are safe. And I looked at her, I'm like, I know. What do you mean? I know I'm safe. But she's like, your front brain knows you're safe, right? Mm-hmm. But the other part doesn't. You know, the trauma, you know, part is not back yet. It's not healed. And that made so much sense and was really helpful, you know, I know I'm safe. Like, what are you talking about? You know, and that was always my response. I know the dog is not going to get me, right? Mm-hmm.
That's
logic.
It's about.
That's not about that. I mm-hmm. still had this feeling completely coursed through my whole body. You know, it mm-hmm. felt like when these things would happen, I would feel almost an electric shock through my mm-hmm. whole body. You know, when you get really scared, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. and in that moment, like a car accident or you think someone might hit you and you yeah. scream and, yeah. you know, that feeling all the time, multiple times a day.
Intense.
And so it was just a lot. And I think I got to the point where I didn't want to be awake mm-hmm. anymore because it was safer to sleep mm-hmm. because it was exhausting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think my mind was so tired. And so I wanted to sleep a lot and I wanted to just check out, you know, mm-hmm. and not be present. Certainly not be present with my friends or a friend group. You know, I just
yeah
couldn't, you know, that just seemed hard.
Yeah, for sure. And you've alluded to it a couple of different times that things that were upsetting to you at that time aren't as much now. So it's clear that you've, you know, had some healing along the way. And within that, it sounds like you've found, well, I don't know how to say it. Within that, you've started to help other people. How do you know when you're okay enough to do that? And how did that come to you?
Oh gosh. I wonder that still.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
It's a tricky and loaded question.
How do you know that you are doctor enough to help other people? Right. You know,
like, exactly.
We can always learn more, right? Sure. There's always space to learn more and do things better. But I was able to pinpoint about 7-8 months out, I was able to pinpoint a handful of things that were incredibly helpful that people did for me, mm-hmm. right? And a handful of things that I wished I would have had that would have been really great, you know? Yeah. And so I just sat there and I was like, gosh, what if I could make this better for someone else? Like, yeah. what if there's something that we can do for these families? Because, mm-hmm. you know, up until then, I didn't think this was happening at the rate that it is, right? 24,000 stillbirths in the US a year, you know, that's mm-hmm. crazy. I had no idea. And so I thought there had to be more. And so I really just set out to create, you know, collections of items that even just healing items that were useful to me. And is there a way that I can gift these to other families going through this after I do? Mm-hmm. It's a simple question, right? Yeah. And so I didn't feel like I had to be super far along or healed or in a good place mentally to be able to pull that together, right? It started truly as a craft project.
For sure. Well, yeah, like for some people, and yes, it was a loaded question, but for some people, the healing, that part, what you're describing of like doing for others and learning and is part of the healing. You don't mm-hmm. have to feel 100% better to help other people. Nobody right. at all.
Yeah.
But it is can really help to know that you're helping someone else.
It did. That was a big part of my healing. I mean, and I, people, you know, will say, oh, that's so generous. That's so thoughtful of you. And sure. But it is selfish of me in a way because it's healing for me. It makes mm-hmm. me feel better. It makes me feel like my son's proud of me, right? And it feels like I'm doing something good with something bad. And that helps, you know, that helps, you know, helps mama heart.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, absolutely. Or, you know, it's not unlike, you know, man, if your living child does something, you know, really frustrating or hard, you know, but then they come and give you the biggest hug and tell you you're the best mommy ever. And then you're like, oh, that filled me right back up. Look at that. You know, that filled my cup right back up. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, you know, finding a way to help others, you know, in whatever capacity that is, it helps. It fills up those dark spots, those holes, you know, even if it's just for a little while, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right, for sure. And I know, you know, a lot of people describe the like post-loss life feeling very lonely mm-hmm. and isolating in many ways. So like what you're describing is of doing things for other people, I'm sure had a huge effect, letting them know they're not alone.
It did. I mean, I think that was, you know, and I even say I had great family and friends, right? But not everyone does, mm-hmm. right? Not everyone is in a supportive situation. And even if you are, you can still feel isolated, right? It, that's the nature of it. That's the nature of child loss, right? You're going to feel isolated because you're going to feel like you can't possibly connect with anyone else about how horrible you feel, right? How just devastated you are. Because no matter what story, you know, what your story is, like what your loss is, whether it was, you know, you lost your child at 39 weeks like I did, or you lost your child at 12 weeks, or your child died from SIDS, right? Whatever it is, that thing is the worst thing that's happened to you, right? And so it makes sense that you feel like no one else can understand just how bad this is, mm-hmm. except maybe another lost parent, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's so important to bring awareness to it so that people can find one another, right? So these parents can start to find one another, because once that happened, right, I start helping other parents, right? And connecting them with these gifts. a light went on, right? And it was like, oh, just like that time when my husband called me in the throes of a rough spot, right? Mm-hmm. A light came on again and helped me see that there's a way through this. Mm-hmm. And it's by connecting with others. It's by finding this community, right? Mm-hmm. And leaning on them and then branching out and making the community bigger. Because there's so many, right? There's so many.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So what happened for you from that point in terms of growing this community and the work that you started to do?
Yeah, so once I talk about building that community, once you start doing that, you know, we're like looking at each other going, how, what else? I mean, should we get together? Should we do a thing? Should mm-hmm. I get together and do a thing? Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm going to be able to laugh again, right, it's going to be with you, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because you're worried about everything from, is someone going to judge me because I'm laughing? Am I like not sad enough? You know, right. I mean, right. There's all these thoughts that go in your head. And so being able to have those conversations with those people who are like, yeah, how was that for you? What was funny? Do you remember? You know, mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, we should get together. We should do some things. So we started doing events and things like hand lettering classes or watercoloring classes, floral workshops, things where we could keep our hands busy, right? But also organically find connection and support. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm all for, you know, any kind of support anyone needs, whether it's one-on-one counseling, whether it's group therapy, that's all great. However, I just find that the friends that we meet that are the greatest friends, we naturally have connected with in some way, right? And so creating these organic experiences for these parents to keep their hands busy, do it in honor of their children, and do it alongside other parents who are feeling a lot like you are. And then also reminding them that, like, hey, you lost your child a year before I did, and you're still surviving. Mm-hmm. Maybe I could too, right? And that keeps you going. And so we came into these, that we started hosting these events, and then even a mother's retreat was formed. And so, you know, it's like, what do we need? What do moms need? We need to get away. We need to get away. We need to take care of ourselves. We need to honor our children, mm-hmm. and just step back from our busy work and family lives that we're dealing with. And so retreats were a big part of that. And so everything just kept growing, you know, just the need and then the support and then what we could offer, right? It was just a response to the need. Mm-hmm. And so it was really easy, you know, to say, well, what would I like? What would be nice for me? What again do I wish would have already been in place when this happened to me,
right?
4 years ago, 3 years ago, we know wherever I'm at, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and then how do we continue to support those folks now? How do I support someone who's me, you know, who's 5 years out, you know, in what ways do I still need support and what does that look like? You know, it's right. different. It's different. So,
right. And, you know, to that point, there's a lot of, I don't know if this was your experience, but what I've heard from a lot of people is that, you know, after a certain amount of time, after the loss happens, like people start to trail off and then expect you to be fine, expect you to, that everything's okay and that you've whatever. But they mm-hmm. still, it's interesting, they like, there's still a lot of awkwardness around from other people, yeah. Around, you know, do I say something? So it's much easier to assume that you're fine and that you're not affected a year later, 2 years later, 5 years later, or whenever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's hard for people to grasp who haven't experienced it, what the grief feels like over time.
Right. And you never know when it's going to hit you, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I was at a, with my family at a, some kind of old timey town thing, right? Mm-hmm. And you're walking through and you're looking at the old barber shop and all this stuff. And I remember getting back to the car and just bursting into tears. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what is this? Where is this coming from? Mm-hmm. And it was simply the thought that my family at that moment should have looked different. Mm-hmm. My family should have looked different. This experience should have been different. And it hit me. It just hit me really hard. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't necessarily ready for it. Mm-hmm. But I let myself cry. I let myself get upset, you know, and feel those feelings. And then since I allowed it, I was able to move through it. Mm-hmm. And then go on with the rest of my day and just honoring that grief, honoring that moment, you know, trying not to shove it down so I don't make anyone uncomfortable, right. You know, which I'm sure it did. But, you know, I've gotten really good about that. Just really comfortable making others uncomfortable. But
I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm. Right. But when you, I think when you can actually explain your thoughts and your feelings on it, you know, and say, I'm sad. That doesn't mean you have to be sad right now. I'm just really sad because I just pictured my life differently. Mm-hmm. I'm having a hard time with it in this moment. I'll be fine in like a little bit, but just like be gentle with me if you don't mind, you know?
Yeah.
And it's as simple as that, right? And that can be hard to say, but if you practice it, you know, maybe you will be able to do it because we do as a society, even I, before I lost my child, I would say, I was not super comfortable with the idea of child loss, with the idea of anything uncomfortable, with death, grief, loss, any of it. Hard pass. No, thank you. Right. You know, and now I'm like, oh, here, I'll talk about it all day.
Exactly. You know, right. Yeah.
So I think the more exposure we get to it, the more we like just in general, even folks who, if you haven't experienced a loss, you can be just a phenomenally better human by just honoring anyone's struggles, right? Honoring whatever it is they're going through. Maybe they lost their father or their mother or a grandparent or a sister or whatever it is, right? Honoring that grief that they're holding and holding space for that, I think is so valuable. And we could come such a long way as a society if we do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the work that you're doing now, the way that you're supporting people, I mean, you've created a whole thing, a whole platform, a whole way to support. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So Haven is a nonprofit, and we have been shipping out healing gifts since the end of 2017. So those are the gifts I mentioned that we send out, and we have a form on our website. And parents, if they're experiencing loss, they're welcome to fill out that form and request one for themselves. We always encourage family members or friends to reach out on behalf of others for them because sometimes they just don't have the strength to do it themselves. So we ship those out actually to every state. We've shipped them to Canada at this point as well. And I think the first year we shipped out like 18 of them. We should do likely over 200 this year. Nice. And that number has essentially doubled every year since we've started and since people have become aware of the organization. We do hold an annual remembrance event in October. This year it's actually going to coincide with Pregnancy and Infant Loss Remembrance Day, which is October 15th. So we always hold a special event for moms and dads that day where we participate in the Wave of Light. It's the International Wave of Light. Maybe we can link that as well. And then most recently, we have launched a podcast platform called Landscape of Loss. So on this podcast, I am actually the host, and we are simply sharing stories of loss and sharing perspectives about surviving grief. So we're talking to parents who are willing to share their child's stories, not unlike what I just did, and trying to get that information out there so that they feel validated and, you know, reminds them and everyone that they love that their child existed, right? Because as parents, we want to talk about our kids, whether or not they're alive or not, right? We love talking about our kids. They're awesome, right? But even if they're not here, I still love my son so much. And I think he's beautiful and he's wonderful and, you know, a true light in my life, right? And I want to share that with folks, you know? And so we're sharing those stories. Parents are coming on and sharing those stories. And then what we're also doing is we're bringing in providers. We're bringing in professionals in the field, and we're getting stories from them about how loss impacts them, about tips and perspectives on grief, right? Talking to counselors, funeral directors, physicians, nurses, bereavement photographers. I mean, there's so many people, right, that are impacted by loss. And so we can create just this intersection of information and have it be essentially, I'm going to use the word selfishly again, a resource that I wished I would have had, right? If I could have looked in and said, oh my gosh, look, there's a podcast episode about lactation after loss. Like, oh, I didn't have any of that information. That would have been amazing, you know? And so we're putting that resource out there. Again, podcasts are great. They're free to listen. You know, you can listen to them anywhere. You can scroll through and see what episode makes sense for you or you connect with. And so we've been doing that since April. We have 13 live episodes and I'm very proud of them.
Yeah. I'm so glad to hear that you're doing that and you should be proud. It's a necessary, there's so much power in the storytelling that comes out for the person telling the story, but for those who are listening who can connect on some level. It might not be every single aspect, but
right. Yeah.
Certainly might be able to connect to parts of it and get the resources and get the information. Because that, I mean, right, the more you learn, I don't know if this was your experience, but for a lot of people anyways, the more you learn about it, the less blame you put on yourself for guilt or shame or whatever it is. Mm. So yeah, we all need that.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
We do. And I mean, I'll tell other parents, you know, they'll say, oh, I just feel guilty. I'm like, it's not your fault. This is absolutely not your fault. But I need to be able to tell myself that too. Mm-hmm. And the more practice I get telling other people it's not their fault, the more practice that is telling myself, right? Mm-hmm. So
that's fantastic. In terms of stuff that you want to share about the platform you have and the work that you're doing, did that kind of encapsulate what you want? Okay. Mm-hmm. Would it be okay with you then if we come back around a little bit just to things that you, if somebody is in the middle of their grief and dealing with the overwhelm, things that you could say to them or hope, and hope is hard to give, but like things you would like to say to someone who's going through it.
You know, I can look at, you know, my grief experience and my mourning experience now from an outside lens, right? And look back on it and just, you know, see not necessarily what pitfalls or missteps, but just spots, right? Spots that were really difficult and spots that maybe I could have used a little bit of guidance through. Mm-hmm. You know, you're in the throes, right? In that dark, difficult time, maybe it's in that first year, right? And just simple things like going to Target sound real hard, right? And so there's two schools of thought on that, right? One is, yeah, go, just go rip that bandaid off. You need to go, you need to go do the things and you'll feel better once you get it done and then get the first one out of the way. The other school of thought is, hey, you know what? We have like order delivery now everywhere. Right. Why don't you just order it and just save yourself from that? Now, both things are true in a certain capacity, right? Because it is a step that you are going to have to overcome at some point. Mm-hmm. Now, if you are not feeling like you are up to that right now, maybe you should just order your groceries online or whatever it is, yeah. Right? Yeah. And save yourself from seeing the inevitable mom with babies in the cart, you know, other crying children, pregnant women, things that are, you know, are going to be triggering, right? Those are the things you know, it's going to be problematic. Mm-hmm. And so I just don't think you should try to be a hero. You know, I think you should keep yourself in mind and make sure that you are being kind to you right now because you need to heal you. Otherwise, you are not going to be able to be there for anyone, whether it's the rest of your family, whether it's future children, whether it's friends. You need to focus on you and feel okay about feeling a little selfish and take that time, you know. Mm-hmm. I think there were even moments when I felt like I wanted to get back into shape for some reason, post C-section. Like what is that proving? Who am I kidding? You know? Right, and so, and I don't know why, you know, that was something that I was pushing onto myself, right? There wasn't a certain person pushing that on me. That was a me on me thing. And so watch out for those, right? Watch out for you being your own worst critic. Because, right, she can be kind of a jerk, you know?
Sure can.
Right? I mean, talk to yourself the way you would talk to your friend. And I think if you can do that every day and remind yourself, I'm going to talk to you, myself, just like I would talk to my best friend or my sister or someone else you care and love about, right? Right. Yeah. So be kind to yourself. Be kind to yourself because I'm not saying no one else will be, but you need to be your number one support and your number one advocate needs to be you. Mm-hmm. It really does. If you can muster together any type of strength, do that for yourself because you will not be sorry. You will not be sorry that you did it. And take that time. Take the time you need. Sit down with a photo of your child or a thing that reminds you of them. Go to the dark place. It's okay. You can set grief appointments, right? You can set those appointments and say, you know what? Today, this afternoon, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to rock in this rocking chair. I'm going to hold this blanket. I'm going to look at the crib. I'm going to look at photos. I'm going to do whatever it is, whatever feels good. Listen to that song. Do those things. Set that appointment because you know you have it then. You know you have it to go back to. It's like a safety net, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can go and you can do that. And then once that's done, you say, okay, I'm going to take a deep breath. And I'm going to leave this space, right? And then I know that I can visit it again when I need to. And whether that's in an hour, you know, in those early days, it might be in 1 hour, but it might be in a week, right? Mm-hmm. Or in a month, depending on where you're at. And so taking those liberties, right, for yourself, I think are so important. And then, you know, something I did is I did put a screensaver on my phone, which I was scrolling through old photos the other day and I found, and I am going to do a terrible job at saying what this quote was, but it was so great because it basically just said, today you don't feel great, but keep going because eventually if you keep going, there will be a day that feels better. You will feel better than this. Mm-hmm. And every time I looked at my phone, my screensaver, I was reminded, will feel better than this. You will. And
right. I'm so glad you're bringing that in and speaking to it too, because like the intensity of grief feels like you'll never feel better again. And it's really hard for those big feeling to have the big feelings. And like you were saying, that front part of your brain to be like,
okay, you'll be fine. Because it's all encompassing. That it just feels like the new truth.
Yeah, it takes over. Right. It takes over. And so, yeah, if you can try to start taking back some control, take back little bits at a time, take that control back. It doesn't mean you're forgetting. It does not mean you're forgetting your child. Right. Not at all. But, you know, you need to take care of you, or you can't take care of anything. Mm-hmm. Right. And you certainly can't, you know, I call it parenting my child that's in heaven. Right. But I can't do that if I'm not functioning, you know? And so it's something to think about. But I will say also, you know, if you have a friend, a sister, a partner, you know, that is going through these motions, you know, keep an eye on them, making sure, right? Postpartum depression is real, right? And especially when you toss grief in the mix and, yes. you know, keeping an eye on changes in behavior, you know, if they stop talking, really are not willing to open up, know when to get additional and professional support. And encourage that, because we can't say that enough, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, sure. Yeah, we need to encourage mental health professional support throughout all of motherhood, right? And for anyone. Right. So So I'm definitely the first one to, you know, sign up for that. And I will say, a lot of the insights and tools that I've been able to gather and then pass on are things I learned through counseling, right? Mm-hmm. Things that have helped me. Mm-hmm. And I just want to be able to pass on the things that help me to other people.
Right. Right. Thank you. And thank you for doing that and sharing your story and creating the platform and giving that love out to lost parents.
Well, thank you. Thank you for also sharing our stories and our platform and taking time and space to honor, you know, the children who didn't make it on, you know, through October. So, yeah. I think that's so important, especially when we're talking about, you know, mom blogs out there, right? There's lots of stuff out there, but you know, it can feel like, for lost parents, it can feel like your kids get forgotten and your situation gets forgotten. So mm-hmm. it means a lot when people honor and hold space for us.
Great. I'm glad to do that. And I'm glad you're now doing that for other parents as well.
Well, thank you. Mutual thanks here.
If you'd like to get connected with Jen, please check out havenmidwest.org. You can also find her on Instagram and Facebook at Haven Midwest. And her podcast, Landscape of Loss, is available on all podcast platforms. As usual, if you know of somebody who could benefit from this resource or benefit from hearing this episode, please do share it with them. The more we can talk about this, the more we can reduce the stigma, the less lonely people will feel in their journey. Thank you so much for being with us. Until next time. Thank you so much for joining us today. Please share this podcast. Together we can support moms and families so that no one has to deal with this alone. Come connect with us at momandmind.com.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.